This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody, my name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
We've got another great show for you today. Ryan, who are we speaking with?
Our guest today is Dr. Karen Neal. Dr. Neal is an affiliate professor in communication and multimedia studies at Florida Atlantic University. She's published 3 books and presented across the country and abroad, including at 2 Toastmasters International conventions. And Karen has also written an article in the November edition of the Toastmaster magazine on the gender communication gap. Dr. Karen Neal, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Great to have you with us. So, Karen, I'm going to try to give them a little brief synopsis, if you will, of your article as I sort of the takeaway I got from it. And you can tell me if I'm on the right track or if I missed the point. So what I'm getting out of this is that in general, there are more or less tendencies that are normative to men and others that are normative to women. And as I understand your point, while they may be normative to one gender or the other, they also can be more effective in certain situations, even if, you know, a particular approach is more normative to the opposite sex. So what I'm getting from this is that just by being aware of these differences, it can sort of expand our repertoire of how we can communicate so that we can make better choices to connect with the audience better. Am I on the right track here, or have I completely missed it?
Oh, you couldn't have done better.
All right. Great. So then with that groundwork, why don't we talk about the 5 differences that you outlined in your article, starting with the first one, verbosity. Can you explain a little bit about the differences between men and women's communication in the area of verbosity?
Sure. And I'm going to do it very succinctly. It's recently been told, recently, there was an article that made the rounds of a lot of media outlets that said that women speak 3 times as much as men. And actually, although that's a great headline, the truth is that women speak more in some situations and men speak more in other situations. Women tend to speak more in social situations and in the family. And this is by and large, and particularly when there are women around. And men tend to speak more in business and professional settings.
Okay. And given those differences, can you talk a little bit about when it might be more beneficial for a man to take the female approach, so to speak, and vice versa?
Yeah, and we have to be very careful with those terms. And I like the way you said it. It's normative. In other words, this has got nothing to do with nature per se and everything to do with nurture. It's just what we're used to in our society and what we encourage among males and females. Well, I know for myself, when a man talks about personal things, is a little bit more intimate, is a little bit more emotional, I am really moved by that. I am impressed by that because I know it's unusual for men to do. And by the same token, and I know this may sound very sexist of me, but you know, this is what I am used to in my life. When women talk about really much more logical, scientific kinds of things, mathematical kinds of things, business-oriented kinds of things, I'm very impressed because it's not often, even in 2013-14, that you hear women who are able to do that with much fluency.
Mm. So it sounds like when people speak pretty much opposite of their stereotypes, that's when it gets our attention.
That's part of the point, that just by the very point of doing something outside their stereotypical behavior, people will get the audience's attention. But besides that, there's something that's really important in some situations about being able, for example, to be intimate, to be personal. I think the example I used in the article was, if you are giving a eulogy, which is going to be more effective? Telling about the business acumen and achievements of the deceased, or telling a story that is really something that people are going to feel emotional about? We know that when the emotions are kindled in a speech or in a story, people listen better and they remember better. That has been proven time and again. So wouldn't it be wonderful if male speakers were able to harness emotion and tap into emotion as much as women?
Gotcha. Okay,
great. Let's move to the second difference in the area of word choice. You refer to a feminist linguist in the article who says that female speech tends to be more correct than that of males, both in terms of grammar and pronunciation.
Right.
Could you expand on that a little bit for us?
Well, I think girls tend to be better students in the lower grades when these things are being taught. I am not the first person to say that girls tend to be very good students in the lower grades. And I think in general, females are taught, of course, there are always exceptions, females are taught to follow rules, including rules of grammar and pronunciation. So I think that they take those rules more seriously. Men are notorious for breaking rules, for taking risks in all kinds of aspects of life. And I think language is just one of those things.
Gotcha. In this case, is there any situation where the woman should be adopt more of the male style? Or is it just a case of men should really work on their vocabulary and their execution?
Well, I always think of Sarah Palin and how she uses these, what would you call them, these localisms, these colloquial terms. Mm-hmm. You betcha is the one that comes to mind. And you'll see presidents who graduated from elite universities, when they are on the campaign trail, they tend to speak much more informally in front of a group of farmers than they would if they're speaking at Harvard or Yale. It's a way of connecting with a large swath, I would say, of the public. I'm just a regular guy or girl. I don't talk like an educated person. I'm just like you. And in some cases, it can sound like it's being very patronizing. You know, what's the matter? You think I don't know proper English? But in other cases, it works. And I think, like most aspects of speaking, we just need to have these tools in our toolbox so that we can know when is the appropriate time to bring them out, or rather so we can bring them out when the time is appropriate.
Right, right. Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. I've heard of this before, the common folk wisdom, and you got to be very careful about coming across as patronizing, as you say.
Exactly. On the other hand, if women, that would be for a good rule of thumb for women. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, for men, I always think of somebody I know very, very well, who actually, I'll even go further, I'll say he's in my family. He is what you might call a master of the universe. In other words, he is very, very, very high up the corporate ladder. And when just the family is together, he'll say things that I can't believe he would ever let loose in a group of his peers in business. And so I think it's just a matter of being very aware of whom you're speaking to.
Gotcha.
You know, something I found interesting in this this topic of word choice is something that I guess I do the opposite of the normative behavior, and that's in the area of hedging statements. You use examples like prefacing a remark with "I think," "I guess," or "it seems to me," and that tends to be my approach. I've never thought of it as a female tendency necessarily, but more just I don't want to come across as, you know, the know-it-all. I want to show that I'm open to other viewpoints and that sort of thing. But then you make the point that those may not convey authority in the boardroom, which I could see how sometimes I may be undermining my own authority, so to speak, by not speaking more forcefully.
Well, there are a couple things I would say about that. One is we really need to keep in mind that this whole stereotypical language thing, as useful as it can be in some ways, is, again, it's the norm, but it doesn't mean that somebody is feminine. Mm-hmm. All it means is that somebody uses linguistic tactics that many females use, and many females tend to, as you say, undermine our own success or present ourselves as vulnerable. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is those men who naturally have traditionally feminine characteristics are known as metrosexual. I don't know if you're familiar with that term.
Sure,
you may well be. It, as far as I'm concerned, it is the highest form of flattery because what it means is that you don't hew to a certain stereotype, that you are your own person, and that something, you know, you might like cooking, you might like, you know, whatever these traditional female modes of behavior are, and why shouldn't you, you know, you may show your emotional side, and that's a very good thing. On the other hand, it's not good for anybody to put themselves down. It's not good for anybody to appear vulnerable in a situation where it's really not in your best interest to be so.
Right. So, Bo, you can keep getting those pedicures and be proud of it.
Awesome.
Karen, our next difference is in the area of topics. And I think we already touched on that. I don't know if there's more that you might want to add to it.
Well, I just spoke to a group that was comprised of women. And I was talking about how men often put down old wives' tales. And in fact, that term is a put down. And what it means is something that is not very important, something that just kind of goes on and on, something that doesn't really matter, and that probably isn't true anyway. And I suggested to the women that actually these topics of family and these topics of romance, which is typically a woman's kind of topic, that these are extremely important aspects of life that women have traditionally ruled. Women are traditionally the head of the house, while men may be the head of the public view of the family, the public face of the family, let's say. So, but the woman is queen in the kitchen. So my point was that while women may use these, they talk about topics that to men seem to be less important, they are obviously extremely important to 51% of the population, because the majority of people are women, but also that everybody at some point in our lives is going to be interested in home and family and romance. It may not be every minute of our lives. It may not be, you know, men may not be as interested in it as often as women are, but these are topics that affect everybody. Romance is not a one gender topic. Generally, it is not a one, and neither is family.
Right. Well said. The next difference is in the area of tone, and there's several examples you gave here, but the one that I really want to hit on is a trend I've noticed over the past few years, both with men and women, but definitely I see it more with women, and that is ending statements like a question.
Like you just did.
Exactly. Exactly. First of all, do you have any idea, where do you think that came from? How did that speech pattern develop? Maybe I'm asking you to answer something outside of your realm of expertise, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I always answer things outside of my realm of expertise, and I talk best about books I've never read. I would say that this is what we used to call Valley Girl speech.
Right.
I just did it. And it's kind of a way of not taking responsibility for what you say.
Right.
And it's sort of a whatever kind of an attitude. You know, if you're forceful, if you really care about something, you're going to speak with a strong declamatory tone. If you don't really care, or if you're being kind of loose, then you will end in a question mark. And I read recently, I can't remember where I read this recently, but I read recently that men are doing this more and more.
Mm. Yeah, like I said, that kind of coincides with my unscientific observations as well. Let's talk about nonverbal behavior. What are the essential differences between men and women in this area?
I guess I can't answer that nonverbally, can I?
No.
Men tend to be more expansive in their movements. I have seen female students who get up on stage to tell a story, since I teach storytelling studies, and they will move their bodies very little. They will move their arms, and I've seen this in Toastmasters as well. They will move their arms only within a very, very small radius. And I think this may be because women are taught from an early age not to take up much space and to really hold their bodies close. In other words, to be very circumspect about their bodies, whereas men are always taught since a young age to be much more comfortable in their bodies. That's my impression of where it comes from. The sense of release that women get in yoga or in any physical activity is really palpable, I think more so than with men, because we are so unused to being comfortable in our own bodies. And I think this translates very easily to speaking. Women are really selling ourselves short if we limit our body language, because, as I say in the article, the most profound form of communication really is nonverbal. People remember that better. I think I learned in Toastmasters that the vast majority of the impression that an audience gets from a speaker is visual, and there are your nonverbals.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I think you take a random sampling of men and women, change the context, put them on a dance floor, and you'll find the women much more comfortable, where the men seem like they're very uncomfortable in their own skin. Sure. Again, generally speaking.
Sure. Wow, that is a wonderful, wonderful insight. And I would suggest that it is mostly an American phenomenon. I have seen Latino men, for example, or Russian men who are all over the dance floor because it is much more accepted in their cultures. And I think in our culture, anything that smacks of art, well, of culture, of singing or of dancing or of artistic expression, we tend to expect that unless you're a professional at it, women are going to be better at that than men.
Great. Karen, this has been a really interesting discussion. I think it's really helped to bring your article alive and bring out some other shades that obviously space in the magazine don't allow for. So thank you for joining us. And I'd like to ask if there's a place our listeners can go to learn a little bit more about you and the work that you do.
Sure. Well, I have a blog that is available actually through the website of my radio segment. So I know that's a little complicated. Don't even worry about what I just explained. Just go to thepublicstoryteller.org. And there will be 4 years of clips of men and women telling stories of their lives in South Florida. And there is also a link to my blog, which is publicstoryteller.com.
Fantastic. Dr. Karen Neal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.